Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Those of you that are regular listeners of the Human Technology Podcast, they may hear it that I'm still working on a little cold I caught me lately. So, sorry, my voice is still a little sore, and my nose is not really open. And I hope that I will get through this podcast, but I decided to do it, to record this episode for you. So please excuse me if I'm coughing or if you hear me drinking. I just want to make this episode, deliver it to you. And although I still have problems with speaking. Anyway, this is episode number 3 on the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, the event early January in Las Vegas. It already feels a bit like it was long, long, long time ago. It is not. It's just a couple of weeks in the past, and it is more than ever relevant. So I feel how this event still influences what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, and that will remain for quite a while, probably over the entire year. So definitely it's worth it to have 2 more episodes on the CES 2026, the one today and the next one probably in 2 weeks. Today I want to talk about everything beyond automotive, everything non-automotive, everything that has maybe only partially, probably not at all, anything to do with cars, with trucks, with mobility, with micromobility. That's not what I'm going to talk about. It is everything beyond this. And at the exhibition, this takes about maybe 75%. Of the attention of the booths of the exhibition halls. Here it is, just one episode about these aspects, but it is my personal focus I'm putting in here. By the way, if you have not listened to the past 2 episodes on the CES 2026, the first and the second one, if you haven't heard them, go back and listen to them. I heavily recommend this, and then return to this one and continue listening here on my personal and my professional experiences at Las Vegas in January 2026. 6 things I'd like to talk about today. Number 1, the revenge of the analog, which is a generic trend that I'm seeing strongly inside the automotive industry, outside the automotive industry, and at the CES. So this is one. The second one is humanoid robots and artificial intelligence, the merging of these two up to now different worlds. And if they ask me for one number one trend, probably this is the one, the merging of artificial intelligence with robots. Trend number three I'd like to talk about is smart glasses as HMIs. The fourth one, household appliances as hubs for the smart home and beyond. Big screens and refrigerators. We have talked about this in the past maybe 10 years, and you have a refrigerator with a screen on it, and then you can check whether your car in the carport is still charging. And yeah, all these things. And it seems like what seems to be a little futuresque, almost like a continuous joke, becomes reality now. Number five, something that I had not on the radar before the CES, exoskeletons. Super interesting things, and it seems like this is a new trend, and it was located right between the micromobility area in the North Hall and the robotics artificial intelligence area, which is basically the best place you could put these devices. And number six will be the term physical AI, which I heard for the first time to that extent at the CES. It seems to be a future trend, and it somehow relates to the humanoid robots and AI, but it has a different connotation, and it's the term itself that grabbed my attention. That's why I put an extra chapter here into this podcast. Let's start with number one, the generic HMI trend with the revenge of the analog. There is a beautiful book of a guy called David Sachs. I think he's Canadian. I'm not really sure. He made a couple of impressions that, for example, vinyl records are selling very good, that classical mechanical watches are back, that many people, particularly from the high-tech industry, use paper notebooks and traditional pens to put down their notes. And this is what he describes in his book as the revenge of the analog. And we see this in the industry. Just this morning, I read an article that China will ban touchscreen-only HMIs from cars in the future, so that there are certain functions that need to be on specific buttons on analog devices. And at the CES, I saw that some of the longest queues formed precisely at experiences that were totally or widely low-tech, that were absolutely analog, or at least clearly physical. One was a series of, I think it was about half a dozen, old-fashioned pinball machines. They stood there, and I played pinball in bars and pubs 40, 45 years ago as a 15, 20-year-old. Yeah, that was something we really liked to do. We played either pool billiard or we played pinball machines in the bars, and they were back, and there were long lines, people playing with these traditional pinball machines. No digital thing in this, very traditional stuff. And another one was that people patiently lined up to play chess or go against a robot, but not on a screen, not on a touchscreen, which you could have done, but with a real board and physical pieces instead of digital interaction. So there was a robot sitting on one side of the board and the human on the other side, and they were playing chess or go against each other. And for me, this was not nostalgic. It was not a nostalgic gimmick. For me, this is a strong signal. In an environment saturated with screens, with menu, with digital abstraction, many users felt drawn to tangible, mechanical, embodied forms of interaction. We, as humans, we are analog beings. And we live in this analog world since 150,000 years. And well, 70,000 years ago, we more or less became, by developing the language, the beings we are today. And since then, we are in a fully analog, tactile environment as humans, with brains we have.
And now we are pressing all the digital stuff into our lives. And it seems like there is a clear rollback, like the tactile feedbacks of the pinball levers, the weight and the textures of the chess pieces, the spatial clarity of a physical board. Yeah, that seems like it creates a type of engagement that screens and digital applications simply cannot replicate. The interaction was slower, probably, but it was more immersive, more human. This trend directly connects to the concept of humane HMIs I discussed in an earlier episode, which is also a trend from the CES. But humane interaction is not defined by technical sophistication, but how well technology harmonizes with human perception, with motor skills, with cognitive preferences. And analog interaction offers exactly that, the direct manipulation, the immediate feedback, and a strong sense of cause and effect, of action and result. And it reduces the abstraction and allows users to feel what they are doing. And interestingly, even in the chess and Go demonstration, advanced technologies remain present. The intelligence, the artificial intelligence, resided in the robot opponent, powered by artificial intelligence, while the interaction itself remained physical and familiar. And this separation, for me, is crucial. The future is not digital or analog, and it's not fully digital, but it's digitally intelligent, and these digitally intelligent systems express through analog human-friendly interfaces, and they interact with these analog interfaces. So the revenge of the analog is not a rejection of technology, not at all, but it is a correction. It reflects a growing awareness that interfaces must become more humane as systems become more complex. Physicality, haptics, tangible interaction are not regressions. They are strategic tools to restore trust, engagement, and emotional connection. In this sense, the long queues at the pinball machines were not an anomaly, but a clear reminder. The more digital our world becomes, the more we value the analog. Number two, the two interconnected megatrends, robotics and artificial intelligence. After the show, many people ask me, hey, Peter, what was the number one trend at the CES? And this question was difficult to answer in some of the past years. Last year, it was artificial intelligence. And the years before, it was sometimes very hard. What is the one big thing I can take home from Las Vegas? But this year, an answer is possible, and it's easy. Among the many technology trends that were presented, two stood out. Not individually, but increasingly as a combination, robotics and artificial intelligence. In Las Vegas, it became clear that these two domains are no longer developing in parallel, but are rapidly merging. And it's precisely this convergence that unlocks new forms of value in human-technology interaction. For many years, robotics was primarily shaped by hardware. Mechanics, actuators, sensors, control systems, and artificial intelligence on the other side developed largely in the digital space with a focus on perception, reasoning, learning, decision-making, collecting and valuing information, rating information. And this year, this historical separation was not maintained. Robots are becoming intelligent, not simply because they can move, but because they can perceive, interpret, and adapt. Capabilities fundamentally enabled by artificial intelligence. Robots increasingly appear to be not primarily as technical demonstration, but as embodied HMI systems. whose relevance derives from the value they create for humans. Vision-based perception, large language models, agentic AI architectures, learning-based controls, they were deeply integrated into mechanical robotic platforms, enabling machines to go far beyond scripted, deterministic, boring behavior. And instead of executing predefined sequences, these systems are beginning to understand context, to interpret human intentions, and dynamically adapt their actions to changing environments. And from a human-centered perspective, this shift is crucial. Technology only becomes meaningful when it improves human lives, when it creates value by reducing effort, increasing safety, improving accessibility, enabling people to focus on what truly matters. This is the way technology creates value. And this value-oriented thinking was visible in these use cases where robotics are designed to take over repetitive, physically demanding, cognitively monotonous, or exhausting tasks. In logistics, in industrial environments, intelligent robots promise to reduce strain and increase reliability. In service applications, they are intended to support people in everyday interactions rather than replacing them. In mobility-related contexts, robotic systems increasingly contribute to safer, more predictable, and more inclusive transportation experiences. The underlying logic of this convergence was obvious. AI gives robots situational understanding and enables them to perceive, reason, and decide in complex real-world scenarios, while robotics gives AI a physical presence and allows digital intelligence to act meaningful in the human world. Neither domain creates sufficient value on its own. AI without embodiment often remains abstract and detached from everyday life. Robotics without intelligence struggles to cope with the variability and the unpredictability of human-driven environments. The true promise of robotics, combined with artificial intelligence, lies not only in technical sophistication, but in the ability to shape systems that are useful, trustworthy, and aligned with human needs. The most compelling examples were not those demonstrating maximum autonomy or human likeness, but those that clearly showed how intelligent machines can make work safer, mobility more reliable, and everyday life more manageable. In this sense, the convergence of robotics and AI represents a shift from technology as a spectacle to technology as a real human value creation. Number three, smart glasses, a new kind of interface. And I've seen smart glasses in the past, last year at the CEM in 2025, and also at the IFA, the Innovation for All in Berlin. They had a strong presence. They took a lot of space on the show floor. But this year, smart glasses appeared in a more mature and grounded form compared to what I have seen before. The focus shifted away from bulky VR XR headsets like this Apple Vision Pro thing that they had, but everything moves toward a lightweight, socially acceptable kind of glasses designed for everyday use. They still look a little nerdy, yeah, typical nerd glasses with big black frames, but they're not covering the eyes. They're not changing the appearance of a face dramatically. They look like little old-fashioned nerdy glasses with bigger frames. That's all. And instead of striving for full immersion, these glasses emphasized, almost subtle augmentation, supporting users without dominating their perception or attention. Little hints, little navigation advices, hardly visible information in the correct location, presented at the right point in time in these devices. That was the real outstanding point here. And technological progress in optics and energy efficiency and on-device artificial intelligence has made these devices more wearable and more practical. So smart glasses are increasingly positioned as ambient interfaces that provide context-aware information, for example, navigation cues, translations, or situational assistance when required and only when required. They are used both in professional contexts and privately in more, let's say, entertainment-oriented use cases. And this restrained approach aligns very well with the broader trends towards humane HMIs and liquid HMIs and ubiquitous HMIs, where interaction should feel natural, intuitive, and unobtrusive. So smart glasses are moving beyond experimental status. That's what I took home. Their value lies not anymore in a spectacle, but their potential as a personal, always-on interface layer that bridges the gap between humans and intelligent environments, between the analog world and the digital world, in a way that is calm, intuitive, and respectful of human attention. And this is why I believe, from a technical point of view, smart glasses have reached a certain level of maturity. And I see them coming in various use cases, probably first of all in professional use cases, that when I'm repairing an engine, yeah, I wear my smart glasses and then I get information from the handbook, the repair handbook, that shows me, hey, this screw is for this, that screw is for this. And then it will move on to private, more entertainment-oriented applications. And then they will become a standardized means of interaction and a device of information presentation to humans. Number four, household appliances as computing hubs. A step, as I see it, toward liquid HMI. So household appliances are evolving more and more into central computing hubs for smart homes. This has been a vision for many, many years. And sometimes it seems to me like a flying car or like, something like a running gag, a constant joke that's always made. And if you talk about the futures, you talk about either flying cars or refrigerators with screens on them. And both are coming, flying cars. Yeah, whether it makes sense or not is a totally different story, but they're there. And we see now, and there were a couple of exhibitors, first of all in the central hall, that were showing large screens to be used as central computing devices in refrigerator doors or other doors of kitchen appliances. And instead of interacting as isolated devices, these appliances are increasingly positioned as intelligent, connected systems that coordinate services, data, interactions across the entire household and beyond. Equipped with sufficient computing power, connectivity, artificial intelligence, large permanently installed devices as refrigerators, ovens, washing machines are becoming anchors of smart home intelligence. They aggregate sensor data, they manage other connected devices, They may even personalize behavior locally, reducing dependence on purely cloud-based architectures and improving responsiveness and privacy. From an HMI perspective, these appliances enable easy-to-use, context-aware interaction. Smart home intelligence is shifting away from individual assistant devices towards embedded ambient computing, with everyday household appliances quietly assuming the role of trusted digital coordinators. Little footnote here. All this will work nicely if I build a new house from scratch, then I can install all the cables and all the data transfers and all the devices I need to have a fully connected smart home and steer that from the door of my refrigerator. Bigger problems are houses that already, of apartments that already exist. So the apartment where I live, for example, has mechanical shade lifters. And if I want to replace them with electrical one, that's an enormous amount of work that needs to be done. And I don't want to have this. So I will live with the mechanical ones as long as I can. But this is typical. Once you have installed something in a house, that may remain there for 20, 25, 30, even 50 years until you say, okay, I'm going to make a big makeover and now I'm going to install all these smart home things. But the vision is clear and the value is clear. And so these refrigerators with screens turn from some kind of future vision into reality in CES 2026. Trend number 5, exoskeletons. Physical human augmentations. And to me, exoskeletons were new. So there was a handful of exhibitors in the North Hall, plus a couple of exhibits in the Venetian, where these exoskeletons were shown. And you have to see it as some kind of belt you put around your waist, and then you put something around the upper part of your legs, mechanical parts, and you attach that there. And then there is some kind of electric engine in there, some kind of mechanical devices that improve the strength of your legs. These exoskeletons were illustrated how mobility innovation is increasingly focused on the human body itself. So we see how technology is moving to the surface of our bodies. And this was not some kind of futuristic concept. The systems I saw addressed concrete challenges such as physical strain, labor shortages, endurance sports, aging workforces. Yeah, most of them were focusing on sport performance, just like long hikes. Yeah? If you're not able to make a hike of 20 miles or 30 kilometers, then you put on an exoskeleton, you can do it. Climbing things, but also walking up and down stairs. And if you think that we have an aging society, this can be extremely helpful to keep people in their environments, not move them to a new environment like a citizen elderly home but they can stay in their apartments even if there's not an elevator and a couple of stairs. If you have an exoskeleton, you may be still able to walk the stairs, although without it would not be possible. The focus of these exoskeletons was clearly on augmentation and not replacement. It augments human abilities. Exoskeletons are designed to support human movements, reduce loads on the joints, stabilize postures, and ease repetitive tasks in logistics, manufacturing, construction, healthcare. Yep, healthcare work is physically extremely strenuous. And if we have these exoskeletons helping the nurses there to perform healthcare, to move the patients around properly. That is a big advantage. That is moving. That's creating a lot of volume. That's moving us forward. And compared to earlier generations of exoskeletons, many solutions were lighter, more portable, easier to integrate into everyday workflows. They're almost like in your body. They're so close on your body surface that, you do not see them. You see them, of course, but they are not anyhow disturbing anymore. And this reflects a strong emphasis on usability and will probably lead to higher acceptance. From a human-centered design perspective, exoskeletons fit very well into the broader trend towards humane technology. They work with a human body and respond to movement and an effort through mechanical support and selective actuation rather than forcing interaction through screens or controls. Exoskeletons are evolving into practical safety productivity tools that extend human capabilities where they are most urgently needed. Number six, the final trends that I saw, physical AI, physical artificial intelligence. And as I said, this somehow relates to the convergence of robotics and AI, but as a term, this one stood out, and this is why I have this extra chapter in here. So while artificial intelligence is often associated with purely digital systems like software agents, chatbots, recommendation engines, physical AI refers to artificial intelligence systems embedded in physical entities and acting through these entities. These systems perceive the real world through sensors, reason about complex situations, and then influence the physical environment through actuators, movements, or force. And this is not necessary in humanoid robot. This can be any kind of mechanical, physical device. Physical AI connects perception, cognition, and action in a closed control loop. It typically integrates technologies as computer vision, radar, lidar sensing, large language models, agentic AI architectures, and learning-based controls with physical embodiments as vehicles, robots, machines, wearable systems, whatever. Unlike purely digital artificial intelligence, physical AI must deal with uncertainty, with safety, with timing, with physical constraints, making reliability, explainability, human trust critical design factors. Physical AI was presented in a wide variety of contexts and use cases, including autonomous vehicles, robots, drones, mobile machines, exoskeletons, and intelligent household appliances. The solution demonstrated applications where artificial intelligence not only decides, but acts. As a clear trend was the shift away from scripted automation towards context-aware and adaptive behavior. Systems were shown that can interpret unknown situations, adapt actions in real time, and interact more naturally with humans and environments. And for me, it will be great to see next year what has changed in there, how they are they improving, and what are new use cases others think about for physical AI. So this is one of the expectations I'm already having for the 2027 show that will be probably super exciting. All right, that's it for today. If you're interested in all this and even more, and if you have heard the other episodes, so far and you want to get deeper into this and you have not done this, order your free copy of my CES report. It's 30-something pages on the entire show, on what was going on there, on my view, what's going on in, and what was going on in Las Vegas, what the biggest trends are. And read it, understand it. If you want to have it, just send me a quick message by email, by on LinkedIn direct messages, whatever digital channel. You will be able to catch me to get your free copy. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.